Reef Therapy by Reef Builders is powered by ICP Analysis. What's in your water?
Welcome once again to the Reef Therapy Podcast. Today we're going to get an update on anything reef-related from our personal levels. We're going to talk about a viral blog article, something that went viral from 2014 on the Reef Builders website. You don't really hear of viral blogs anymore, but that happened. We're going to talk about local fish stores, and if we've got time, we're going to talk about Michael Paletta's article about choosing a proper tank and stand today in the Reef Therapy Podcast. Let's go around the table real quick. What are we drinking, Mark? What do you got tonight?
I had two really strong IPAs after my run with my friends, so I'm back on the Heineken, which is like my water beer, my safety zone, so I don't start talking smack on this podcast.
Very nice. Very nice.
Raj? I'm pulling up another local beer, little Sweetwater Brewery 420 to commemorate, you know, the date.
I had two of those after running. That's the beer. That's my favorite. It's IPA or pale ale. I don't know.
Have you had this one, the 420 strain?
No. Yeah. Just regular old 420.
No, get the black can, the 420 strain. It's pretty good. It does not.
Contains cannabis?
It does not. No. But the hops that they use actually give that smell and flavor to it. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I did a brewery tour
ever,
there.
Has anybody ever desired that taste or smell?
Apparently.
Have you been to their brewery, Raj?
Yeah.
When they do like a little... Did you ever see that little section in the way back where there's like a couple of couches and like a bunch of magazines and you're like... And it has like the smell. And you're like, oh, this is where you guys hang out, you know? It's like in the back, you know, little employee-only section.
We should do a remote session from there one day.
That would be good. Yeah, that's a good that's a good place.
From the back room?
That's right.
Yeah.
That is not a fog machine.
Yeah.
Reef Therapy Podcast has now started.
What are you drinking?
I've got a Bud Select because I'm boring. We got some... we got at the radio station one of the... they're not a brewer, but they're like a hard, like a seltzer company in town. And they're all like watermelon splash and lavender lemonade. And I was going to, but I decided against it. You know, I'm already getting made fun of enough in the comment section. I don't want any more fuel for the fire.
Oh, so. I've got some good friends that love those things.
Yeah. I'm sure it tastes delicious. And maybe I'll try it next week if coaxed in that direction. But yeah, it's a local. They actually came in. Have you guys ever seen those coolers that are long, and you like it? It almost looks like a sword case or something. But the six pack is just the can stacked up on top.
Oh yeah,
have you seen those?
I've seen that. No. Like they're single row, I think they're, almost, right?
Yeah, I think they're for golf bags. I think that's you just stuff it in the golf bag and it fits. I guess I don't know. Hmm. But it came in that, and everybody was asking me if I was doing yoga that day, and I was like, nope, just going home to drink. Same thing. Same effect, right? Let's go around the room real quick and ask about just, like, personal tank stuff. Anything new for you, Mark? What's going on there?
No, the dunked Versa is still rolling.
Very nice.
I've sort of switched over. It was so nice doing two-part when you have it dialed in and you can just kind of set and forget it. And then once a month, you just fill up your containers, right, with a doser. But I've gone just full calc on both systems. And my calcium and my alkalinity are in line. I kind of like dialed in the dosage. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's see how long I can go with just calc. And that's just going back to just a lot of discussions with Chris Meckley, just about, you know, maybe not stressing about the elk and stressing more about the pH and letting the elk sort of do its thing, which I did on one experimental tank, which everything went great, even though my elk went all over the place and all the corals were just jamming. And I thought, maybe there's something to this. So then I finally converted the big tank over and... Yeah, it's weird. Like, nothing's complaining. And I even, a couple of times trying to get the alk dosage right, my alk bottomed out, which has happened with two-part dosing before where I forgot to, you know, refill the dosing containers. And then the reason I knew is all my corals went, you know, haywire, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you see your acros start to look like they're about to drop all their tissue, and like all kinds of weird stuff happens. And my alk bottomed out, and like everybody was still trucking, like nothing happened. You know, it's just, the only reason I knew is I was testing, you know, just to try to dial in the kalkwasser dosage, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So still haven't caught the regal. I haven't really tried, so that's on me. What else? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my tanks are on autopilot, you know. I don't do a whole lot to them. I don't buy a lot. Unrelated, but we're trying to, now that our kids are able to, you know, be more self-managed, and by that I mean, like, they're both old enough to fall asleep by themselves, go to the bathroom by themselves, and get food from the pantry by themselves. Well, you know, we took a look at our yard, which was beautiful when we first moved into our house, and, you know, then you have kids, and like the whole yard just went to crap, and we're like, let's bring it back, you know, let's. And then my reefer brain is like researching plants, like their corals, and, you know, it was like think about a reef Aquarius thinking about, you know, planting a garden. And then you realize how cheap other hobbies are. You know? It's like, oh, this is a super, super rare evergreen. You're like, oh, okay, how much is it going to cost? And they're like, it's $40. And you're like, okay, you know. And then, you know, like you see like pumps get announced and new lights, and they're $1,000 and a $300 power head. And you're like, what am I doing? You know, like maybe I should just get into gardening and just start growing plants outside. And I don't know. Although the indoor plant crowd is pretty crazy. I don't know if you've ever gone down that YouTube rabbit hole where they're like stealing from botanical gardens, or like thieves and stuff. And there's plants that are, you know, people are like taking second mortgages out to buy rare house plants. Like that's more like reef keeping, right? Like you're like, oh, I identify with those people.
Just recently came across this whole trade for plants that are coming out of Singapore.
Oh, wow.
Because you can get them cheap there, and then they are brought over. I'm guessing they weren't brought over legally, but they're brought over here, and they're super expensive here. So, you know, that's like a great, I call it great, but it's a cheaper way of getting them. But I just never even knew that was a thing. It's just crazy.
Yeah, there's a Vice documentary about, there's like a particular species of plant that every indoor plant enthusiast wants. And I think there was a botanical garden out in California, and they had it like 20 feet up, you know, in a basket, like hanging. And then it had a cutting, and the cutting, or like a, sorry, like something that you could prune off of it and root. And it went missing. And they can't figure, I mean, it was like, what was that? Was it the Thomas Crown Affair? Was that the movie where he steals the painting from the Met? It was like, they couldn't figure out how they stole it, right? Because it was like way up there. You would have had to bring a ladder in the middle of a botanical garden, like climbed up it. And then there was like all these people, like, they were trying to figure out who stole it and going on social media. And it's actually a quite interesting Vice documentary if you ever have time to watch it. And you could totally see that going down in our hobby, you know, like if somebody had some ultra rare rainbow chalice or something, like, you know, these things are getting, what's that?
You see that pop up time from time on social where some scumbag goes into a local store and steals a coral out of their tanks. And, you know, they, now that so many of them have cameras, they're able to shame them. Yeah. I don't know if anything happens though. Do they ever catch those guys?
I don't know.
There was a guy, I think it was Gingerbread Corals up in Chicago. They had a guy steal an Aussie Gold torch, and actually, like, he was a frequent customer, I think, and they ended up finding out who it was, approached with police, I believe, He just gave it back. I don't think they pressed charges or anything, but man, I you really got to be a special kind of person to go inside of a reef store and dunk your hand in a tank,
yeah,
pull it out and put a coral in your pocket. That's just crazy to me. But I get it. I mean, when it comes to prices that are in the thousands for a lot of these pieces, like you said, you know, that might be someone's only way of ever attaining something like that. And then they're going to take it home and kill it,
yeah,
most likely.
Well, I'm waiting for that story where the guy tries to steal a colony of pallies and puts them down his pants, and then we get ugh. The, you know.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
We'll cover it.
We'll cover for it sure. for sure. Right. Karma.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a point. I had something I was going to say, but I totally forgot, so I'll...
Must be that Bud Select.
Yeah.
Must be that Bud Select, yeah.
No, I think that's where, I mean, I think eventually I'm going to be uninteresting and boring because I can't keep up, man. It's like I don't want to go buy, you know, $1,000, $600 corals. So I just keep growing the same old crap. And every once in a while, like, something is interesting enough for me to buy. But it's like,
yeah,
I look at like the stuff on Instagram. So I'm like, there's no way I'm keeping it. Like some of these, they'll have like a dozen trackies of every color on their sand bed. I'm like, those things are what, $300 a pop? How much was that, you know? So, well, I mean, more power to them, right? Like, to somebody, that's pocket change, right? Like, everybody's in a different financial situation. But it's just, I have a hard time reconciling that. I don't know.
So. Well, some of those old school basic corals make a comeback.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like Digitata, remember we were throwing that stuff away. And then I don't know how many years ago it was. It just disappeared from the market and the prices went through the roof. And, you know, I think about how many thousands of dollars of that coral that we couldn't even give away. Ended up back in my calcium reactor.
I see people asking like $100 for a green Slimer frag online. Whew. I'm going, that's a weed, man. That's, you know.
That's what it was interesting when I went to go visit Steve at Corner Reef in the last video. He said that leathers are one of his biggest seller at the moment, and I love that, you know, as a kind of a leather nerd, you know, having sarcophyton be one of your most popular corals, and I don't think that Jake or I or anybody who has publicized the really cool ones like the weeping willows and the long polyps. You know, we've obviously contributed to that a little bit, but...
I'd rather have a big, bland coral that's big and showy than, you know, a tiny frag that's got a lot of color to it, so... Now, a big thing that's got a lot of color is even better, but, you know... Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't trying to go down the negative path, but it's just funny, you know, I go buy plants and it's like, this is cheap, geez, you know?
Yeah. There was someone, what is his name? Ken Law. Law's Tropical Garden. One of his first frag swaps. He opened a store, I believe they're in Wisconsin. And one of their first frag swaps was Reefstock Denver last year. And they brought houseplants. And people went nuts for the houseplants. And they did it again this year. And it's interesting because there is that marriage of houseplants and coral. You kind of get the same vibe, all the different, you know, species of different plants, and they are a lot cheaper, but it's cool that he brought a ton of those. And I don't know if he's going to be at our swap this weekend, but he was here last year and did the same thing, brought a whole bunch of houseplants. You can see people walking out with corals and houseplants. It was kind of funny.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
I think whatever's at the core of what we love about reef keeping is probably the same thing for people that keep houseplants or get into bonsai trees. And when you go down, you know, you go into YouTube and you start watching videos of people that are like the reef builders of bonsai trees or whatever. I'll lose like 3 hours of my life just going down, and I'm starting to learn about the different types of little maples that they, you know, work with. And I've had so many conversations with Jake about it, and it's like all of a sudden, it's like, even though we're, you know, talking about reef tanks, it's like after the fact, he's like, oh, check out this channel. This guy's a bonsai master, and some guy takes like this ratty looking plant and, you know, puts wires in it and starts shaping it. And we're both like, whoa, you know. But I think it all just is sort of rooted in the same, I don't know, I don't even know what the word for, you know what I mean?
So do you ever go down those rabbit holes and then just kind of slap yourself in the hand 3 hours in going, stop it. Stop trying to learn a different hobby. You can't.
I know. It's like, I don't need another hobby, right?
Right. We do not have the time.
Yeah.
I love the guys who take who rescue the plants, who's you know, they'll pull them out of the pot and take all the soil out and replant them. And they comment on the soil that they were in before. And These are all things that are kind of, I have no idea what they're talking about because I'm not super into it, but it's always fun to see them take like revive a ficus or something like that.
Well, it's fun when you get a feel for their passion too. You know, like you go into the freshwater world and you find a guy that's just obsessed with freshwater rainbow fish. And he's got a whole basement of this one comes from this creek in Australia. Like, it's not even from a river. It's like this one little creek. And
yep. Yep.
And it's just that passion is contagious where you're like, yeah, yeah, I see how the tail fin is slightly different. You know, it's a different shade of orange. Yeah. You know, and then like Raj says, you kind of have to slap yourself like, all right, what am I doing here? You know?
I gave a talk at the Missouri Aquarium Society. It's a freshwater. And I talked to them about macro tanks and, you know, kind of piqued their interest on, you can have a saltwater tank that kind of looks like a freshwater tank. You could even put like mollies in it and stuff. And they were kind of like, oh, that's pretty cool. But there was a guy that we had dinner with that night who's an older gentleman, and he was a killifish guy. And he said he had 82 tanks in his house of different killifish from all over the world. And it's the same thing. It's very much like, I was just walking. There's a puddle and there's some killifish in there and they're a new species. So I got them, whatever. But he used to go on like expeditions and all over the world. And they'd go in the rainforest and go check them out and, you know, see if they could find a new species of fish. But I thought that was fascinating. He's like, I'm not doing that anymore, but people send me some because I forget his name, but I guess he's pretty world-renowned. We got him in our backyard here in St. Louis. So
that would be so cool to do. I mean, imagine just going randomly into a rainforest looking for just life that you haven't seen before. I mean, I guess it's no different than what, you know, Luis Rocha and Brian Green are doing down in the depths of the ocean, just discovering new fish. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I used to love the old, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Herbert Axelrod. He was like one of the founders of Tropical Fish Hobbyist magazine back in the day.
Okay.
I think he claims to have discovered the cardinal tetra, or, you know, maybe it was a neon tetra, one of those two. I think the Latin name is like Axelrodi. You'll see a bunch of freshwater fish and like it's genus and then Axelrodi. And it's just like, it's like reading about Teddy Roosevelt going into the Amazon, you know, and like that, oh, we got malaria and then the tribe attacked us. But then we found the cardinal tetra, and, you know, I'm reading this as a kid, like, whoa, in these magazines. And I think it turned out later that like he was a total, well, he was not a good human being.
You know, I have Herbert Richard Axelrod was an American tropical fish expert, publisher of pet books, and entrepreneur. In 2005, he was sentenced to U.S. court to 18 months in prison for tax fraud. Yeah. And that was the worst thing he could do, I guess. But
well, I think I think it came out that he stole a lot of the discoveries. Like, he didn't discover the fish, but he had the clout to publish. And I don't know. I don't quote me on that, but he has a pretty sordid past of like maybe all the legendary stuff he did wasn't actually all that, you know, accurate. So
I think that was pretty common back in the day though, right?
Yeah like that guy that went to the North Pole, and you know, they have like a museum for him in Maine, and it turns out like he went and hung out with these I don't know if they were Inuits or, but you know, people living way up in the Arctic, and a meteorite had fallen like near their tribe a long time ago, and that's what they used to start fire. I don't know if it had magnesium in it or whatever, and he took it. He took it back for the museum. So he literally like removed their only way to make fire, and then he took like a couple of kids with him to like showcase, like, hey, look at these, you know, interesting people that live up there. Like, well, horrible person, right? But there's museums about him, and you know, so
just things are worth a lot of money.
Yeah, like. But still, it's like in a place that has no trees, you know, you take their only way to make fire. Kind of
describing the British Museum there. It's pretty much how they got their entire collection.
There's so many good memes about the British Museums, but we won't go there. Or I won't go there. You guys can go there.
Raj, what's going on in your tank world? Any movement?
You know, I've been actually focused on flow. Water movement, and I don't, with the new Nero 7 coming out, it's just kind of a new thing that, ooh, here's a new pump. And it looks, I haven't got my hands on one yet, but it looks to be fairly low profile. I've always been a hardcore Tunze fan. I've always liked them in my big tank, and I like their smaller pumps. So I was looking at those, obviously those Ecotec, the Vortex, and then I don't know, this Nero 7 seems enticing.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's just
the 3 is
new
awesome.
Or...
I've got the 3, yeah, and I love it because it pushes a lot, and it's like you said, it's very low profile. I actually saw an interesting application for the Nero in Chicago at Chummingham's Reef. He's got that 450-gallon lagoon. He actually mounted 2 or 3 of them on the bottom glass, so he's got water shooting up.
Oh, nice.
So he's got, the water coming out the sides, and then, he's got these small Nero 3s on the bottom of his glass underneath the rockwork pushing flow through there, too. Now, he's, like, huge SPS heavy, lots of motion. But, yeah, I've always been kind of an AI fanboy a little bit. It was my first light, so that's probably why I kind of lean that way. But
interesting. Yeah. I have never owned an AI product at all. I don't think I've even used one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
At all. I remember them at trade shows. And then I remember when, Ecotec and AI merged. But I never, ever, ever, ever used one. It's just so weird because I think I've pretty much used every brand out there.
I like that brand a lot. I've used the Hydras in both 26 and then... I have 52s, and then I've got some 64s. I've got three or two Neros, the small ones. And yeah, they're great. I would have liked to have used Neros on my tank when I set it up, the big tank, but it's got 3/4-inch glass. And so seeing the news about the Nero 7 supporting that thickness of glass was actually pretty cool. I'm a huge Tunze fan like you, Raj. The company I have used very little of is, it doesn't make sense to say that now, but I was going to say Ecotec, but now Ecotec AI are part of the same parent company. Yeah. But I've only used a return pump from Ecotec, and that's it. I've never used any of their Radeon lights or Vortec. Not like I out of choice, it's not like I'm boycotting them. I just have never had the opportunity to do it, and I really like AI's app. And to me, that's your user interface to the product, and I always thought AI had a killer app for their lights and pumps.
There's something about the AI souls a lot of the... Because I think it was one of the first LED lights on the market, I think. I'm trying to find the year of what that was, but Brandon from Ultra Corals or Zoanthids.com, you'll see him at trade shows at Frag Swaps, and he still runs those souls over his frag tank for display for people to buy. So, and he's got great looking corals. So, there might be something about those older generation lights that that have a little more pop to them than what we've got today.
My first one was the PFO fixture. Oh, this thing was huge. That.
Yeah.
It was a monster. And God, I hated that thing. It was just, it was big, it was heavy, and it just didn't compare to my halides. My halide and VHO combo, I quickly went back to that. And I think my next LED venture from there was when the Radeons came out.
Is this Solaris?
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I have a 72-inch fixture here. That's $3,400. Did you pay that?
It was a lot.
That was
It was really expensive.
Yeah.
And I think I ended up selling it for like $50.
That's insane. So you actually got the tank filled and you're leak testing, or you're just
checking flow and stuff right now? Gathering all the equipment.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. I just got hyper focused on the flow part of it because, I'm planning out the aesthetics, and having pumps on the tank, it alters the aesthetics there. I used to do a lot of closed loops, and I don't want to do a closed loop on here. So figuring out what pumps I can do, since it is a smaller tank, it's more difficult. I really struggle with the smaller tanks. I'm much better with the large scale aquariums where you can just really hide giant pumps and a lot of flow and use closed loop systems and things like that. So this is challenging for me. I'm having a hard time. Yeah.
Well, Mark will come over and help you. You guys are close.
That's right.
You're putting me to work.
we'll go to that Mexican away, joint first.
Yeah. Eat a burrito, some margaritas.
I'm sure this tank will look great after all those margaritas.
Yeah, have a case of the efforts after that. It's like, that's fine.
I got some good news today from Marissa on our Reef Builders team. It looks like Ultim Nature Systems. We'll be working with them a little bit. So I've got a tank maybe coming from them here soon. I'm very excited about that.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yeah, new tank in the works.
Yes.
I think this first one's going to be a little bit smaller, but I'm excited for it because I have a good idea for it. So we're going to go that route. They've got these really cool stands now.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the natural wood grain stands. Black and white are cool, but I think for what I'm planning on doing with this tank, the natural wood grain stand is going to look awesome. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, their stuff is just so sexy. It's such clean design. Absolutely love them.
Yeah. We got a frag swap this weekend. Our has kind of been taken over by a company called the Reefing USA, and they bring in a whole bunch of different, I don't want to say national, but regional vendors. And it's fun. Like it really is. It looks professional. It's a lot different than what it used to be. And someone, I don't know if it was on a YouTube comment or someone emailed and said, do you know if there's any like actual frag swaps that happen anymore where people just show up like they used to with four or five different frags and you just trade. Now I think anymore it's you come with cash and you leave with coral and that's pretty much it. You know, there are several, like one of my buddies, Tyler, who's been the Lobster Bowl guy, he's coming with, you know, he's probably got 10, 15 different toadstool frags, leathers that he's bringing, and he'll swap or, you know, have people buy them from him there. They're not anti if hobbyists are getting together and, you know, swapping or whatever. So that still happens, but I really think that it'd be cool to have a swap that's actually a swap. I don't know if that actually happens anymore. Do you guys know of any places that do that?
I don't think so. I mean, locally here, when we did our club swaps, that was my favorite event of the year. And you would have both. You'd have coral vendors, like legit stores, and then you'd have the home growers that would set up their little tables, and then you'd have, you know, the cooler sellers. But there was a lot of swapping going on and just kind of peer-to-peer sales. But it was always the hybrid because you did have the vendors and the sponsors selling there too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be a fun if it was just the swap only. And I think that would have to be those specifications would have to be made at the club level. Like that'd have to be like a one-off thing, because I know the club still has to make some sort of money. Like there has to be some way to keep it up and running. But the way that the Missouri Marine Aquarium Society did theirs that one night, it was totally different. I mean, they have these meetings and it was just like, hey man, get your betas. Here you go. Here's these guys just hatched. You can have these. Here's some mollies. You know, and they're just like exchanging bags of fish everywhere. And I was like, well, what is going on? No money exchanged. No, nothing going on here. It was just an interesting difference. And mind you, I know that there's a little bit of a price difference in freshwater and saltwater livestock.
That's where my brain went, is when the frag swaps were popular in the reef hobby, I think coral frags were a lot more... I'd say they just were more in line in pricing, right? There wasn't this huge scale of difference between, this is, you know, a $2,000 anemone and this, you know, like when you showed up with a bunch of acro frags, they were just frags that you were pruning and the other guy was pruning. But I think once the corals started to be, once you could sell these prunings for like $200, $300, that sort of killed the swap part, right? I was like, well, shoot. I mean, and I don't blame you, right? It's like, if you can make a grand off of, you know, trimming back your tank, why would you, you know, and you don't necessarily need new corals, why would you trade? I don't know. That's just my take on it. Is I think it was a lot more common. I remember going to my very first Atlanta Reef Club meetings back in 2000, and nobody in Atlanta had SPS frags. You know, I came from Colorado where everybody was SPS crazy, and I came to Atlanta, and there were like two guys growing SPS in the club that I knew about. We became good friends, but like I just gave stuff away just because I was excited that other people were getting into Acropora and Montiporas and stuff. But you know, I think the world's just now, if there's profit to be made, then that kind of kills the momentum of a swap or a trade, right? I don't know.
Well, it's an expensive hobby now. So if you can recoup some of your costs by selling your trimmings, then, you know, it's a good way of doing it. It's a good way of keeping yourself in the hobby or keeping the hobby in check. Or at least, you know, diluting the expenses so that they're closer to what you've told your spouse the stuff actually costs.
Yeah.
So you're Montipora. Why are you not Acropora? You know?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Acropora sounds cooler.
Yeah.
But Montipora, I never liked Montipora. I don't know. Monty Penny, okay. James Bond. Who knows?
Gotcha. In college, in some of my anthropology classes, all the professors would pronounce what I always thought was Neanderthal.
Oh, jeez.
And I think that's a whole, like, professor preference thing, too, where it's...
How do you say...
Is this how you say it?
How do you say the full genus for gonies? Like, goniopora or goniopora?
Goniopora.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm always just the goniopora. But I think for you, I might be Goniopora. So I might change my entire vernacular. So I also got this. I think I showed this last time.
This came
in the mail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've kind of been on a quest to up my book game. So this has been awesome to kind of go through. And I don't know if it ships from Australia. Russell Kelly's from Australia, but I don't know if this actually comes from Australia, if they have like a warehouse here in the US somewhere, but it came quickly. I joked last time that it'd probably be a month, but I think it came in 2 weeks, but just really cool, nerdy stuff, you know, getting into identifying corals and things like that. Yeah. So
we need more good books.
Yeah. And this one's updated a lot. I mean, I think he updates this every year, it looked like, which is cool. You know, as genus and species and all those change over time, and those kind of are fluid.
I'm going to grab a book real quick. You should get this book. And there's a PDF version. Hold on.
We need some music whenever Mark goes to get a book.
Have you guys seen this book? Where's the camera?
Oh yeah.
It's
That's
great.
Thick.
Yeah, I got schooled by it. You know, what's the Xenia-like coral? Suspicularia. It's not Suspicularia anymore.
Yep. What?
And then, you know, I texted Jake like, "Holy crap!" You know, I didn't know this. And then he's like, "Yeah, there's a Reef Builders article like a year ago about it." And I'm like, "Shit." He used to call me out because I'm bad about reading all the articles, and he would call me out every time. Like, "Yep, we wrote about that 2 years ago. Glad you read the blog, man." Like, sorry,
man. Every once in a while, I will suggest an article to Jeremy, who writes a lot of our stuff, and I have to go back in the Reef Therapy or the Reef Builders log to see if there's anything that's ever been done on it, because there's just so much that's been written about it. So. It looks like everything that I'm seeing still is everybody on the hobby side is still considering it to be Suspicularia. The blue one is awesome. I had a piece of that. Oh, it's so cool. They'll grow too. They're very Kenya tree like in growth pattern. They're a little more wavy, but like they'll drop, you know, frags of themselves and are hard to get off rocks. But yeah, that's
That was a great coral.
I have a complaint for all those texts. Sorry, go ahead.
Just going to tell a story about, do you remember Philip Root?
He was rings a bell, yeah.
He was local here, and then he had a coral facility in Alabama. I think that's where he was growing out his corals, and that's who I got my first blue suspicularia frag from. And I think it was here when he was down here for Macna, maybe like in 2008, maybe, when we had Macna in Atlanta.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And then he went on to start the supplement company Thrive. If you guys remember that, and they had their additives in those aluminum bottles.
Oh yeah. 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 I remember that. Do you remember Scientific Corals? They were based out of Atlanta.
They were. Yeah. Yeah. I do remember that.
I forget the guy who ran that. That was like an early coral farmer, right? I mean, back in the day.
Yeah. I remember talking to him. I remember talking to him. I don't remember his name right now, but he was really proud of, like, he had some special techniques in his fragging and the way they were growing out stuff, because I'd asked to come see his place and he wouldn't let me come by and see it. Wouldn't give me a tour he didn't want to reveal his secrets of his grow outs and his fragging techniques.
It's probably he didn't want you to see his Dremel or something, you know.
Probably.
Yeah, I remember he had a lot of Gorgonians for sale is the thing I remember. I actually ordered some when I was in Colorado from him. No, I was going to say my beef with all the taxonomists in the coral realm, they keep renaming corals, and the new name is way less cooler and harder to pronounce. Like, suspicularia was weird, but then it sort of got cool. Like, oh, that's a cool name. And I forget what the new name is. I'd have to go dig it up. But I remember thinking, like, that's a horrible name. And then, you know, they did it to our euphilias. And I just, all these new names don't sound as, like, sexy. You know what I mean? Like,
you're sounding very get off my lawn right now.
Of course.
Yeah.
I found the article. These are not the suspicularia you're looking for.
Nice.
Written by Jake Adams, and I'm gonna butcher this. Conglomeratus clara.
Yeah, that sounds real cool.
Is the new genus for the suspicularia genus. So I don't know. That's pretty cool. I think.
I rest my case. That's like a horrible name compared to suspicularia.
I want to get in. Let's switch gears here real quick, because I wanted to make mention just briefly about how the internet works. And on our call this week for Reef Builders, Jeremy said we went viral, and we're all like, "What did it? What video was it? What?" And he's like, "No, it was an article that Jake wrote from 2014 about the pink porcupine crab," which is it's like something you would see in nightmares. It's a deep sea. I feel like it's a deep sea king crab, I think, if I'm correct, part of that genus. But it looks pretty scary. And somebody tweeted it on Twitter, and then it just went nuts. And so,
yeah, that was crazy.
Just goes to show that it's,
what is it, 3.5 million at that time when we looked at it. And I don't know what it is now. And then on our side, it hit, that article got hit over 30,000 times in a day. So it was just crazy. But the comments, did you read any of the comments on that article?
Yeah, I've got them. people were talking about how this is a new crab, or the crab has evolved due to global warming, and that this is a new species, which it is not. It was first discovered in 1894, and it's not spiky and weird looking because of global warming. That is not the thing. But some of the best comments I saw were, the effort to pick that crab would use up more calories than gained by consuming it. this is the AI villain version of a king crab. And my favorite was, it's like a Pokemon mixed with the Mind Flayer from Stranger Things.
Yes. I was just about to say Stranger Things. That thing belongs in it.
Yeah. Yeah. But crazy that a blog from, you know, 7 years, 8 years ago went nuts. just because it looked creepy. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, it was on the list, right? It was on a list of, what was it, the top six ugliest animals. And it made that list and then just went nuts from there.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a solid protection plan when you're in the ocean.
I think most all crabs are kind of hairy and spiky and creepy. They creep me out. Even an emerald crab, like I was never able to pick one up. I couldn't hold one in my hand.
Really? I don't have that response to them. I don't know. They don't bug me. They bug my wife. She hates getting into murky ocean water because she just thinks about the crabs. Whereas if the water's clear, she can see them, like she's okay with it. Yeah. I think it all goes back to like one day we were swimming in Virginia Beach. We were visiting some family, and like this crab snuck up behind her and pinched her Achilles and, you know, just hurt like hell, screams, and she turns around, and, you know, and the thing's just running sideways away, like, ha, 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 you know, like, just, like, you know, just not a defensive move. Like, the thing was like, I'm going to get that person and then run away kind of thing.
Yeah.
And ever since then, and, you know, Virginia Beach, you know, like the water's pretty murky. It's not, you know, Caribbean blue or anything. So then she was like, I'm not getting in any murky water. So, but I don't know.
They're always them. French to me. Like, they always run away and they're like, ha ha, yeah. I've succeeded.
What are the big Japanese ones? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Those like are
the,
cool. Yeah.
Oh, those are creepy. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about like the giant
ones. The giant ones, yeah. Imagine walking into any body of water and one of those guys comes up to you and like, what's up, dude? You just stepped Japanese into my house. Crab. Yeah.
Have you guys ever gone night diving? It's
no.
It's awesome because like all of those type of crabs come out. There was this wreck dive I did, and it's like this sunken ship that you go dive, and it's just all of these, I don't even know what kind of crab it was, but like, you know, sort of the spindly leg, nocturnal crab just crawling all over this sunken boat, and it's just like, it was pretty spooky and cool. I think that stuff's cool. It doesn't spook me, so I guess I didn't watch enough horror movies or something, you know.
Screaming in my mask. that article is up on reefbuilders.com if you want to check it out. I know Jeremy did a follow-up to it just to kind of explain why it went viral, and then you can also check out the original article that Jake wrote back in 2014. I'll also link that in the show notes in the description below, so check that out if you get a chance. Make sure it's not before bedtime though, because you may have nightmares. I wanted to talk local fish stores because the most recent video that I did was at my personal like local fish store, the one that's closest to me, the one that I go to all the time. And I don't know, I always felt like, and you always hear this, that the local fish store is struggling. Obviously that's not the case in 2020 when the government's just passing out money to everybody and everybody's got to be at home. So we saw a huge boom in the hobby in 2020 and early 2021. So maybe not those 2 years really, but it's still a local fish store. They still have to compete with Amazon and Bulk Reef Supply and, you know, all the online dealers. I've always felt like I've done a good job of I get my salt from the local fish store. I get food from the local fish store. You always go in there and see if they've got anything new and weird. It's just good community. I felt like I've done my part, I guess, but I don't know. Is it enough? Is it enough to keep that going? And someone on the video said, because I open the video with, it's no secret that the local fish stores are struggling. And this person said, are local fish stores struggling? And it got me thinking, like, is this just something that we've just kind of heard and repeated and repeated and repeated? And I would imagine it's probably across the board. Some are doing better than others. But I'd love to get your thoughts on your local fish stores and, you know, how well they've helped you in the hobby or what they've provided you in your hobby, if that makes sense.
If it is fake, that is a brilliant marketing technique that they have pulled together. Just genius, right?
They've all band together.
They've colluded.
They have a Facebook group.
And they scammed us all. Our stores locally have been pretty consistent lately for, you know, I mean, we've had some closures, but on the most part, I think they've all been around now for, 10 years?
Yeah, I mean,
right? At least?
You know, back in 2002, when I was living in an apartment with my girlfriend who became my wife and we had kids, you know, we were finally like, oh, let's go buy a house. And I ended up picking a house for many reasons, but one of the reasons was it was close to my favorite local fish store. I wouldn't say that motivated it, but it was like, when you're weighing the pros and cons of two different houses, like, well, this one's right by. And that fish store, you know it, Raj. It was Aquarium Showcase. It was owned by George.
Yep.
Then I think he went to the Caribbean for a little while. I don't know if he was retired or something. Then he went to, is it Augusta or Columbia, where he started Star Aquatics? Did I get the name right?
Yeah. Yep.
And then he came back and he took over Aquarium Showcase again and rebranded as Pure Reef. But point being, I have changed homes, but I've lived in this vicinity for 21 years, and it's the same store, right? It's changed names, and it did change hands, but it's back to its original owner. And I think it's also what the local fish store makes of it, right? Like, I've been into plenty local fish stores that are like, you know, a bunch of 2x4s holding up some fish tanks with bubblers, and you know, the carpet's moldy, and you know, sometimes like those are the best stores where you find the coolest stuff. And I can't speak for George and his financials and if he's successful or not. I don't know what that looks like. That's his business, but he's been around a long time. His store is really popular, and I think the other thing is I could be wrong about this, but I know he does quite a bit of maintenance account business too. So, hey, and you know, the area I live in, like, there's some affluent neighborhoods around too. And I think there's people that are like, hey, I want the 600 gallon reef tank behind my basement bar or in my, you know, in the room where I house my Scotch collection and, you know, leather bound books or whatever. And so I think they also probably make a decent killing, you know, maintaining tanks for those kind of people. But that store is, you know, it's clean. You go in there, it's they offer good advice, and they've been around for a long time. And like I said, I mean, they did change hands, but he's been in the business a long time, right? So I think it's what you make of it too, right? It's not to go all like, you know, live the American dream and all that, but I think it's like, if you develop a business, and whether it's profitable or not, has a lot to do with the owner and you know, their ambitions and how they approach it. And it also could be the market, right? I mean, I think in an affluent area where people can afford to put a big fish tank, you know, next to their pool table, that's probably a good market to set up a fish store. But in certain other markets, maybe it's not as successful, or parts of the city where income may be lower. So I don't know. It's a sort of a loaded question, right? Like, you could go one way or the other with it. It's one of those questions where the right answer is some arrogant guy looking at you and going, it depends, you know, which is never a satisfying answer. But
well, I think it's the stores have had to adapt, right? When e-tail really came in and hit hard, and it was a thing, right? Like, this isn't going anywhere. Amazon and the e-tailers are staying here. The stores had to adapt, and they had to figure out how were they going to replace that lost income, because obviously they couldn't get the margins now that they were used to. So the ones that adapted, that made the stores more of a destination, I think, because for me it was always like a field trip. Even if I didn't need anything, I wanted to go to the local store, and I just wanted to hang out, and I wanted to just window shop. And I always left with something. But if the store wasn't appealing in that way, I don't know if any of those stores, at least locally, are around anymore. But you know, George and Angela, that they're on the maintenance thing, they didn't always do maintenance. There was a big span of time where they were just a store and they weren't doing the maintenance bit. So I didn't even know that they had switched to doing that now.
But they have a formula. I could be wrong about that. I kind of assumed, right? That yeah, they were, but maybe they aren't. And didn't they found the Fish Store and More downtown in Buckhead, which is again like a very affluent area? But
well, the original Fish Store and More was a great store. Now it's kind of it's changed. It was like a warehouse. Yeah. I think it's a warehouse now. So it's not the nice store that it used to be. It's completely different. I think they took the name because that Fish Store and More is closed down.
George
has some sort of formula because they've opened multiple different stores and they've sold them off to, you know, somebody else and kind of moved on and did something and then came back to another store. So he's got a magic formula to make it work and obviously make it profitable. Otherwise, why do it? But who knows? Maybe he's a Nigerian prince trying to give away his money and we've just been ignoring the emails.
I mean, if I was living in, I don't know, some other city where I wasn't competing with George, and I said, okay, I want to set up a local fish store. Like, he'd be the guy I call and just, you know, tell me, give me advice here. Tell me the do's and don'ts. And because, I mean, I think he's run a very successful business. And what I like about them is, you know, I think the online market is great, but now we're in a weird world where the online vendors also are part of the company that makes the products, right? Aperture and all that. And I mean, nothing wrong with that, but now you get the video when the new light or the new pump comes out, you know, because that store, that online store, it's in their interest to kind of pump that product. Whereas, like, I love going into my local fish store, Georgia store, and you know, they're like, yeah, the verdict's still out on that one. We're testing it out. You know, like they'll give you candid advice and feedback because they set up tanks with all the different products and they have favorites, right? They have things they like and dislike. And they're not in it because it's like they're not part of the company that also makes the product and they want you to be successful. So I kind of like that candid advice I get from them because I don't, unlike Jake, I can't test every light and every pump and, you know, so it's like, hey, man, you know, nobody's sending me free stuff. You know, like I buy my shit. Like I go when my pump dies, I got to go buy a $300 pump. And I used to call Jake, right? And Jake's like, no, that pump, don't buy that pump. Buy this pump. You know? And I'm like, yeah, but you wrote this article. He's like, yeah, no, just no. Anyway, he was usually pretty honest about that stuff. But yeah, like I want to know my money's going into something that I'll be happy with. And I think the problem with some of the internet stuff, again, it's not a criticism because it's a good business model for them, like more power to them. But as a consumer, I'm like, well, that hour long video, like, am I really getting like the real, like the good and bad about it? Or, you know, so that's just my independent take on it, I guess. But
I always wanted accountability. You know, if I buy the pump and there's something wrong with it or I need help with it or it sucks, I want somebody to be able to point out, it's like, you told me this pump was good, or I have a problem with it, I need some help, and somebody is there to answer me and help me. And the online store is a different experience. You know, you don't get that person. And I think that's changed to a certain degree now where there is a lot more tech support available, but I don't know. There's just something like walking into a place and dealing with a person and, you know, saying, just getting your answer right there and then, or being able to take your pump in and troubleshoot it in person, drop it in their tank and say, yeah, it's a defect, or no, you're an idiot, you're doing something wrong, you know, or looking at the thing and saying, did you drop this in your sump, you idiot? Like, you know, Versa is out of warranty, sir.
Yeah. Well, and seeing it in person and getting your hands on it and, this tank's got Hydras on it. This tank has Radions on it. This tank has Kessels on it in your fish store. And you're like, okay, well, I watched a billion internet videos reviewing and different people like, you know, talking about the product, but like now that I see it in person, I really like that one. You know, like I like the light quality of that one. Like that in person experience is really nice, you know?
Yeah, so. you can't tell the quality on the internet, right? All the photographs look the same. But you see it in person, you can see that if it has heft to it, or if it's well built, or what size it actually is. It's stupid because I deal with measurements all day long, but you know, I can read it and it can tell me what size it is. And then I get it in person. I was like, oh, wow, that's a lot bigger or smaller than I thought. And it's just so dumb, but it's, there's just something different about holding it and having it in your, right there in your face.
I've always told people on the channel to utilize the local fish store for what is your brand of salt and do they carry it? Because if you ever need salt, they've got it, you know, or at least can help you out in an emergency if you need to do like a huge water change or something goes awry. And then I bought a tank and stand through my local fish store too. You don't have to worry about shipping. They're going to take care of all that for you. They put it on a route and boom, it's at your store. You don't have to worry about any of that. They'll help you load it in your car, all the things that you wouldn't, you know, a lot of shippers will just leave it at the end of your driveway on a pallet. Good luck. Yeah. But yeah, our local fish store, we have six in the area, so we're pretty lucky. Each one of them has their own different flavor. I would say that Corner Reef, like I said in the video, is kind of like the antique store of coral shops, and not that everything's old, but just that you go in there and the landscape has changed almost every single time. Steve buys tank breakdowns all the time, and you know that people are always getting out of the hobby. So they've got kind of this aggregate of online and all the local fish stores in the area and trading with other people. And so you get this whole tank filled with a bunch of different coral from different places. And you kind of, you get to pick and choose right there on whatever that tank breakdown was. So I've always thought that that was cool. And he really wants to, with the new retail side or with the new expansion side, clean it up a lot and, you know, put all the healthy, good looking stuff front and center for people. Cause like he said, he's got in the tank with the, Interruptus angelfish, he's got this like little colony of probably 10 to 15 beautiful jawbreaker mushrooms, but they're in the middle of the aquascape. You can't see them unless you like, you know, you're above it or you go around it. Obviously he'd sell them to you if you asked about them, but nobody asks about them because they don't know that they're there. So I think that a lot of what the expansion will do for him is allow him to kind of clean that up and make sure that everything looks presentable and nice. So I hope he still keeps some of those tanks, as he called them, a hot mess. Because you just never know. You know, Tyler and I, my buddy here, we will find some of the weirdest stuff that comes in. And that's the stuff that really piques my interest. The stuff that you, not necessarily the super fluorescent stuff, but like the weird Cinellaria species or the weird long polyp sarcophyte and whatever that may be. And then you take that home and go grow it out and see what it's all about. But, I don't know. I've always really appreciated the local fish store, but that comment made me go, are they all like doing awesome? I mean, he's not driving a Lambo or anything, but, I just, you know, I was curious.
Yeah. So, we had a store like that in Colorado that had all the people just getting rid of their stuff. So all kinds of used filters and stuff. And when I was a broke college kid, I loved it. You know, like you could just go pick up. I bought like an old wet dry and like turned it into a refugium, you know, and just stuff like that was fun. Like that, I like those kind of stores. It's kind of like liking a dive bar. You know, sometimes a dive bar is really fun. They don't all have to be fancy, but, yeah, I don't know. I haven't, Raj, maybe you've ventured out a lot more in the Atlanta area. I haven't. I'm just in my little bubble here, where I live, but, I haven't really explored the other fish stores, but, the one thing about George's store is that like he brings in the tried and true stuff. And he does bring in some fun, weird stuff, you know, like he's had some really cool, he'll bring in like hell freaky firefish or, you know, some just stuff that you don't see every day. What I liked about, and I don't, Porter, who actually works at Pure Reef now, and he worked at the fish store and more back in the Buckhead days, which was the downtown store. You know, he was kind of like the science-y guy at the fish store more in Buckhead, and like point out all the weird stuff. And they had some, they had like a tank with a Joubert plenum with like mangroves growing out of it. And like, I love kind of the freak show tanks like that. Like even at the studio at Reef Builders, right? It's the mangrove tank that everybody loves.
Yeah.
I'd love to see George do some of that. Like he's got these beautiful displays, right? But they're like, I mean, they're beautiful. Like they're perfectly aquascaped. They're clean. Everything's thriving. But like there's, it'd be fun to throw a couple of weird tanks in the mix at his store, you know, just like a random mangrove thing. With,
there's no way George would do that.
No, right? That's just not his style.
I think he's too OCD for that.
He is, man. Like his fish only system up front and that reef tank he has at, right at the front door. Like you, Remy, if you ever come to Atlanta, we'll take you there. Like you walk through the front door and you have to go through, like you have to pass through two identical-ish tanks. And one of them is a fish only, I think it's like, what, 600 gallons or something like that? Massive emperor angel in there, and then there's a reef tank on the left. So it's like you're immediately presented with your two options. Like you can go reef, you go fish only, and then you walk through all the dry. Like, I mean, he's got it down to a formula. It's fantastic. Like you could cookie cutter that out and make it like a franchise. You know.
One other thing to kind of transition into before we wrap up tonight is the Michael Pauletta article that he wrote on reefbuilders.com. about choosing the proper tank and stand. I think this kind of goes hand in hand with the local fish store thing. He wrote this article, you know, it's very good information, especially if you're a beginner and you're just getting into this, you're just taking those considerations of where the tank's going to go, how big do you want to go, how much can you afford. I think one of the lines that stood out for me the most was, for beginners, the best range of tanks is thought to be from 40 gallons to 90 gallons. I started with a 13-gallon tank. So
my first reef tank was a 29-gallon.
I feel like that's Sanjay's. Doesn't he have a 29-gallon that's been up for 50 years or something?
He tore it down.
He's got a few tanks.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I think he moved it all to another tank down to his basement, and that, or he moved the 29 down and sprung a leak, but I think he moved all those into a new tank. So, but I love that 29-gallon he had with all the softies. Yeah, I've watched that Reef Builders video, I think, 1,000 times. I love that little tank.
That's one of the most popular, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, the part that kind of stuck out to me was his bit on sumps. I'm a big sump guy, and he mentioned that you can just buy, or that he likes to buy used tanks and throws them under there and then just sticks all his stuff in there. And that's, I think that's a wasted opportunity. You know, there's no magical potion or pill. There's no one piece of equipment that's going to do everything for you. So every piece of filtration that you add is like a tool that's helping you out. And the sump can be a tool rather than just a place to put stuff. It's an oversimplification, I think. And he gets into a little bit more detail later and talks about, you know, all the other filtration elements and in the successful tanks, that this is what you would need. But if I was a beginner and I started off with just a tank under there, I think I'm starting off unprepared a bit. I don't know. That was kind of the part that poked me in the eye a little bit. And
did you and Jake get along on the sump situation? Because I know he's a very simple sump guy.
We did not. And in fact, when we were in Atlanta, we had a long conversation about it then too. This was an ongoing thing because this was years in the making that him and I are going back and forth about the sump that he wants for the studio. And he kept giving me these super simple renderings. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. That's not good enough. Reef Builders needs something better. And like you said, he's just a very basic sump guy like Mike. Mike was he's very simple. He just wants a space to put stuff. And I'm a gearhead. I want all the tools. Like I want all the bells and whistles on there. Give me the sump that does everything for me. It's got the cruise control button that I press and then I can walk away and just enjoy the tank. And Yeah, we did not agree at all.
Yeah, I think I'm more of a simple sump kind of guy. But
gosh, well, it was nice knowing you, Remy.
I the only sump. Well, this is I've had several in my hobby in my career in the hobby, but this latest one that I've got this. I should take some photos of this. I actually traded 3 superstar zoanthids when those were very popular in 2000, I don't know, maybe 17 or 18, and $200 for this sump that I've got now, which is probably worth in the neighborhood of $600 to $800 in acrylic. And it's got spots for all your Apex gear, all that stuff. I'm not really running any of that on that tank, but it's got the huge refugium. It's a Triton method sump.
Nice.
Huge refugium on it. And there's only 4 chambers. So there's the
who makes
the overflow refugium. It's a custom tank. It was a custom sump. So this guy was definitely going to run Triton, and he knew what he wanted. It has lids for every single compartment, which is nice. Yeah, it's. I think the refugium part has just kind of taken over in a lot of ways. But yeah, I think I like to clean things. So if I know that I can get in there and clean every compartment easily, then I'm good. But this one's kind of taken over a little bit just because there are a lot of nooks and crannies, and I definitely utilize the refugium in all the wrong ways with, like, block and balls and all the things at the bottom, which is detritus traps. And it's one of those things where you can stick a siphon down in anywhere, any part of the refugium, and it's just, like, dark, thick detritus coming up through that tube every single time. So,
Well, Mike does say that, you know, that you want that access. You want to be able to actually get into your sump and be able to do it. And that's what makes a successful tank. And you see those sumps that are just crammed, just jam-packed with all this equipment and stuff. And I look at that and go, wow, that looks really cool as a picture, but how does it work? Like, if you need to go in there and clean anything or even adjust something, how do you do it? And can you do it? Can you take something out of there? Or is it just stuck forever? Like, let's say the one of the pieces of filtration in there dies. Does it just stay there? It's now a monument.
Yeah, it's part of the plumbing. It's
a landmark now.
I've always been for the longest time I was a DIY sump guy, used aquariums because nobody made what I wanted, you know. So even back in the 90s, I mean, nobody made refugium sump. It just didn't exist, you know. There was always the wet dry with the skimmer. You could, you know, if you were really like modern, you had a Berlin sump, which was just pretty much the skimmer. I don't like mechanical filtration. I don't lose sleep over detritus, so I think filter socks are a waste of space. Sorry, Raj, and I probably will disagree on that one.
Yep.
And then when they started introducing a refugium in sumps in the 2000s, they always made it like an afterthought. And I was always of the, and this is pre-Triton, you know, just being a Walter 80 fanboy and having good success. I mean, I ordered Calerpa from Dana Riddle when he was in Cleveland, Tennessee at the Aquatic Wildlife Company, like in the 90s. Like, that's how far back me and refugiums go, right? I was like a young kid, like mail ordering Calerpa taxifolia, which I don't think you're allowed to buy anymore. But yeah, it was like, oh, they made the refugium an afterthought. And I was always like, you know, I'd rather have a massive refugium and a tiny skimmer compartment. Because I do love protein skimmer, but I'm not one to, you know, get the mega skimmer going. And it wasn't until the Triton method that you started to see sumps that made the refugium larger. And I think the sump I have now is a Trigger Systems Triton method sump, where the filter socks are optional. You can pop them out. It's got a 2-foot refugium. And it's like, oh, this is perfect, you know, because it does have little dosing holders and probe holders. So it's like the perfect sump. I could never build that for myself, but just me and my style, I always had to DIY because nobody made what I wanted. You know, I wanted to maximize growing Calerpa or Cato or whatever. And then just to me, the skimmer was like a bag of carbon. You know, it's like you just You want to do a little skimming, get like the dirties out, but
you're killing me.
I know, I'm sorry. But that's what's worked for me, you know. That's sometimes you gotta partner the methodology with the personality.
Coral was doing,
huh?
He blamed the Regal.
He was blaming the Regal. And now we know the real reason.
At least I have a reef tank in my house.
Dang!
Shots fired.
I was gonna say I've had prolifera before, Cobra prolifera, and I believe the other one is the fern. Is it Mexicana? Maybe.
Yeah. So taxifolia, because we were all growing Cobra racemosa, which was the grape Cobra. But yeah. It would go sexual on you and, like, you know, as yes, they called yes. it, and, like, just die on you. And then...
tank would be all cloudy.
Yeah, and then I think maybe credit is given to the ecosystem method guy. Somebody started pushing taxifolia. Yeah, Lang. Maybe it was Lang. I don't know who, but it's like Mexicana, but it's very small and thin. So it's there's not a lot of, like, tissue, so if it did go sexual on you, like, it wasn't the end of the world. So it became a real popular one before we discovered, like, hey, we have Kato and we don't have to deal with Cobra anymore. But then taxifolia, I think, was invading California and the Mediterranean, and so it became the bad guy Cobra. But it was great. It worked great for refugium, as long as you don't dump it in the ocean.
Cobra taxifolia is called the killer algae.
There you go.
Because it is an aggressive invader of the ocean floor. So.
But think about it. If it is that, then it's a hell of an algae for your refugium for removing.
Yeah, right.
You know?
If you can find it.
So are you running the Triton method?
No.
I am not either. No.
You know, they started 15 years ago, Triton.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think that.
Similar, I guess the moonshiner's method has become more popular these days. Sending off the ICP tests I don't know how often it is. I'm not super familiar with it, but I know they dose elements as needed, you know, based on these ICP test results that you're sending. I want to say it's like weekly or biweekly. Like, you're sending off a ton of these ICP analysis kind of tests. So, and I know Triton does that, but I think it might be more like once a month, right? That you send.
I don't know. I know they were the first. I mean, when they showed up with the ICP test, people were like, what the hell is that? And then I remember talking to him at InterZoo, and he was trying to bring an ICP machine into the United States for MACNA, but it was like they thought he was like a terrorist or something, because, apparently those are used to help. You know, I mean, obviously it's a testing thing, but, like, I don't know. There's something about just him bringing this device into a MACNA conference. He was saying, like, the government was giving him all kinds of grief.
You know, he pulled it off. Isan had it on display, and I think it was in Denver. It was at MACNA Denver.
It?
Yeah. And that was the first time that, you know, the ICP machine had been shown, and it was in the reef industry, and it was right there for you to kind of, and nobody knew what the hell it actually was at that point either. Cause he was, you know, he started it, and he said that, I mean, when you're the first, it's difficult to convince people that, hey, here's this magical new technology that's going to tell you more precisely what's in your water. But I remember
the road
thing
for all those other folks, you know, that are doing ICP testing now. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. And, you know, at InterZoo, I had some great conversations about, you know, because back then we were still sort of discussing, you know, why can all the Australians keep flower pot corals, gonies, and, you know, the Americans struggle. And then he was starting to see a pattern with, you know, higher manganese levels in Australian reef tanks versus U.S. And, you know, and then, you know, I think obviously sourcing where we're getting our gonies is a big factor, but the quality of salt has definitely improved in the U.S., you know, with, you know, once we all kind of moved away from instant ocean and reef crystals, and now we have all these, I mean, geez, choose your bucket, right? There's so many different. So I don't know. He's just, the guy's got a lot of great ideas. He's a fascinating, like, Raj, you're talking about like those late night conversations at a MACNA or whatever. Like, he was He's one of those cats that you could just talk to for hours. So
yeah, he's got an unbelievable amount of energy.
Yeah.
We need to harness some of that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I
love that.
Yeah.
I think the key is just not waking up at 3:30 in the morning every day. Step one.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
How do we get on Triton Method? We're talking about Paletta's tanks and stands, and now we're talking about Triton Method. But I do think it's cool. I feel like my first ICP test, I got it back, and I was like, you know, I think this is the case for a lot of people where you get it back, and it's suggesting things to you, maybe elements that you've never even heard of in your life. It's suggesting you to dose these. And I think you take a lot of that with a grain of salt. And it's really more so like looking for like the heavy metals that you may not know are present. For me, I think the biggest thing, and I talked with Steve at ICP Analysis about this, was what's in your RODI water? What's getting through everything? What are those things that, you know, you think this super clean water that's, you know, zero TDS, that's all the other stuff that it's not catching that you're putting into your system, what's going in there? So I actually just sent off a couple kits today. So we'll see what's in my RODI water. I'm very interested to see that because, you know, you see results in your tank and you're like, okay, we've got algae, nuisance algae and things like that. But that's, you know, pretty typical. Is there anything weird going on in that fresh water? So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's. I think certain things are hard to test with ICP. I mean, Than had some interesting stories about Jake telling him, you know, maybe some of the issues he was having was related to copper. And he's like, well, there's no copper in my ICP test. And then he did like a traditional copper test, and sure enough, he had copper. And so I think there's still some limitations. I think we got to figure out, you know, or at least have the disclaimers, right? Like the around all that. But I think there's a huge value in it too. I mean, it's interesting because I did a bunch of ICP tests and I had high cesium levels. And it was like, Chris was like, are you using Red Sea products? I'm like, yeah. He's like, ah, there you go. And it's like, that's interesting, right? Like just something that, something like that, he was able to pinpoint what vendor I was using. And I mean, I don't know. I wasn't really having any serious issues related to that, but it was just vendors source stuff from different places, right? And so sometimes the byproducts are going to be slightly different and little things spike that are slightly different. So I don't know. It's interesting stuff. I never got into Triton because of the dosing, little bottles, and like that's just not for me, man. Yeah, that's too... two mad scientists.
Those were hard to find for a while too. They were gone for, so if you started that when Triton got popular years ago, and you tried to find those, you know, what were they, part one, I think there's seven different parts or whatever to that. I'm speaking off the cuff, I don't know, but they were hard to get.
Yeah,
they were. If you relied on that method, you're just out those supplements. So that's another drawback, I think, to that. So all right, guys, well, let's nip this reef therapy in the bud here. If you have any questions or, you know, topics, things that you'd like for us to cover on reef therapy, make sure to do so in the comments section on YouTube. And if you are like me, you listen in the car, the audio version only, make sure to just hit us up on the Reef Builders social medias. If you have any questions for us or, like I said, topics for the future, go ahead and let us know. And we'll see you in the next one. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.